And now to take us into our message today, I would like to share another music video that I think is right on topic.
When I was born, they looked at me and said, what a good boy, what a smart boy, what a strong boy. When you were born, they looked at you and said, what a good girl, what a smart girl, what a pretty girl. Got these chains, hang around our necks, people wanna strangle us with before we take our first step. Afraid of change, afraid of staying the same. When temptation comes, we just look away. This name is the hair shed I wear. This hair shed is woven from your brown hair. This song is the cross that I bear. Bear with me, bear with me, bear with me. Be with me tonight. I know that it isn't right. Be with me tonight. Go to school, I write exams. If I pass, if I fail, if I drop out, does anyone give a damn? If they do, they'll soon forget, cause it won't take much for me to show my life ain't over yet. Wake up scared, I wake up strange, I wake up wondering if anything in my life is ever gonna change. I couldn't tell you I was wrong. Chicken down, grabbed a pen and a paper, sat down and I wrote this song. I couldn't tell you you were right. So instead I looked in the mirror, I watched TV, laid awake all night. We got these chains hang around our legs, people wanna strangle us with them before we take off. Smart boy, what a strong boy. When you were born, they looked at you and said, what a good girl, what a smart girl, what a pretty girl, yeah, yeah.
Well, for this week's message, I'm using the character of Barney Fife as the poster child. And for those of you who are too young to know who that was, because it was a long time ago, Barney Fife was a major character. He played a deputy sheriff in the Andy Griffith Show, which ran way back in the late 60s. And with true comedic genius, Don Knotts developed this whole persona of a hapless deputy trying to gain respect and authority. But poor Barney, about the closest he ever managed was permission to carry an unloaded gun and a single bullet in his shirt pocket. And if you knew this character at all, what I'm about to say may make you cringe a bit at first, But I think we all can relate to Barney Fife, at least a bit. Isn't there a part of us that longs to be at least a big fish in a small pond, to get a little recognition, a little respect, and rise up and find our old place in the sun and be taken seriously? Don't we all need and seek validation at least once in a while? We live in a world that is preoccupied with authority. And unfortunately, for the most part, it is authority that comes at us from the world and is imposed upon us rather than emerging from within. And the authority boot camp starts real early. One day it's coochie, coochie, coo, you are so cute. And the next day it's, you know, Santa is watching and he's making a list and he's checking it twice. Early on, we are told, we get the message, children should be seen but not heard. And not long after that, it's off to school. And I don't know about any of you, but that's where I was introduced to the dreaded permanent record. Anything bad you ever did was recorded for all posterity. Of course, it was just a myth designed to control your behavior. But this approach came with a serious side effect. It installed in you a false belief that if you messed up in some way, large or small, there was no coming back from it. Even the smallest mistake became part of your overall identity forever. We have all lived through a hellacious 12 months with the coronavirus. So much of our lives has been dictated by the coronavirus. But the whole authority virus starts to infect us very early on and permeates everything. So even as kids, we would say to somebody who would get a little bit bossy, "Who died and left you, boss?" And then there's the classic, "Oh yeah, says who?" Which almost always brought the response, "Says me, that's who." And the battle was on. Of course, all authority is not bad. I mean, establishing lines of authority is important for our survival. And so it begins with our parents. And then gradually, other characters are added in. We're introduced to firefighters and teachers, police officers, nurses, doctors, aunts, uncles, grandparents. The list goes on and on. As for me, I had a couple of bonus characters. I had priests and nuns. And the chain doesn't stop there. It continues even into adulthood. We go off to college, and there are college professors that we have to answer to. We go into the work world, and there is a boss. Always a boss. We get married, and so maybe there's another boss. Last Sunday, the much-publicized interview between Oprah Winfrey and Meghan and Harry provided us with a classic illustration of what we're talking about today. Meghan spoke and shared of the enormous pressures that she had, that she was subjected to by the royal family, all of the things she had to do and the things she was not allowed to do, even at the sacrifice of her health and well-being. It's the same thread that runs through the highly watched TV program, the series, The Crown. And everybody that I have spoken to about the interview last Sunday expressed to me a belief that what Meghan was sharing, at least in a large part, was true. And that she, her husband, Prince Harry, and their son, Archie, were oppressed by an unwritten royal system of do's and don'ts. But think about it. were your experiences and my experiences so far removed from that? Were they really all that different? Maybe what we went through was not quite as exaggerated, but the do's and the don'ts were there. I may have not been a part of a royal family, but so often my family could be a royal pain. Some authority, as I said, is healthy and good. It's necessary to avoid chaos and maintain a certain degree of order. But the problem is we can easily become shackled by too many restraints. It's so easy for us to start feeling powerless. We feel constrained by a bombardment from everywhere as to what is allowed and what isn't, and it becomes insidious. At some point, we begin to own it. We believe it. Our minds become the gatekeepers that establish the boundaries. It's almost like an electronic fence used to train a dog where it's okay to go and where it's not okay to go. A man by the name of Brian Tracy wrote a book called Time Power. And in the book, he talks about locus of control. Psychologists have discovered that you feel positive about yourself and your life to the degree that you have established an internal locus of control. Psychologists also found that if you have an external locus of control, coming from places such as your boss, your bills, your family, your health, or some other factor, you will feel negative, angry, and often very depressed. And you will feel frustrated and unable to change. You will develop what Tracy in his book calls learned helplessness. We need to take a step back. We need to take a deep breath and connect with what's really real. What's really important. We need to embrace our unity principles. And in this case, our first principle in particular. There is only one presence, one power, active in the universe and in our lives. We all are familiar with the story of Moses coming down from the mountain, carrying the Ten Commandments, and in disbelief, finding the Israelites worshiping a golden calf. When I heard this story, I always thought, hello, what is wrong with you people? Moses, your leader, is up there consulting with God, no less, and you're busy constructing idols? How could you be so dense? How could you forget where your bread is buttered? Eventually, I learned to grow empathetic, less judgmental, because reality as perceived through our senses can be cold and harsh. And the Israelites, in their experience, were immersed in the so-called real world, confronted with no doubt with real-life dangers, fears of hunger and pain, isolation and loneliness, and their very survival. And so they thought they had to find a place to put their faith in gods that they could see and touch. They were looking for authority that they could see and touch. Isn't this the crux of what we've been witnessing in Washington the past few months and the past few years? Isn't this the rhetoric coming out of congressmen and congresswomen? Isn't this what that rhetoric is all about? Isn't this what the votes in Congress have been about? Not the issues, but the attempts to gain and cling to power, and the heck with integrity and accountability. But we all do this to some extent, especially when we find ourselves in pain or facing a crisis that's bigger than life. So desperately we seek control, not realizing that by seeking control on the outside, by appealing to some false god, we're not gaining authority. We're giving it away. Nobody understood this better than Jesus. The writer of the Gospel, John, tells us of Jesus' confrontation with Pilate in the midst of the Passion story. And Pilate says to him, "Don't you get it? Don't you understand? I have the power to release you or to crucify you." And Jesus replies, "You would have no authority over me unless it had been given to you by the Father." Throughout the Gospels, Jesus' authority is constantly being questioned. Who is this guy teaching this stuff? Isn't that the Nazarene, the brother of James, and the son of Joseph the carpenter? And the scribes and Pharisees would come to Jesus and ask, "By what authority do you heal people?" You see, back then, as is the case today, credentials were important. And so they could not understand that it was Jesus' love and service to the Father that empowered him so much, that enabled him to quiet the wind and calm the seas and heal the sick and walk on water and even to restore life to somebody that had died. It was his love and service to the Father that made him powerful. It's what gave Jesus a strong internal locus of control. What could we do if we were to dare to embrace our relationship with God so completely? How might it change our lives? Think of all of the people and things in your world that push your buttons. Now imagine pushing a button and having that all go away. Think of the effect it might have, not just in your own life, but in the world in which you live. This type of authority already has been given to you. God granted Adam the power to name everything in the world, and in doing so, gave Adam dominion over it all. I don't know if you ever had an experience of full authority coming from within, from your very core. I have one that I would like to share with you. I've told this story before, a long time ago. In one of my many trips to Brazil, I stayed for the weekend with my close friend down there. And one evening, I was feeling thirsty, so I went into the kitchen to try to find a glass of water. And as I was doing this, I became very aware of another presence in the room. And I slowly turned. And there, on the right, was a 100-pound Rottweiler that my friend had outside of his property to patrol the grounds at night. And somehow she managed to get inside of the house. She wasn't showing signs of being friendly. Her tail wasn't wagging. Instead, she started to do a very slow growl. And she started showing her teeth to the point that the spittle was just coming out of her jaw, like in the movie Cujo. And so I was really terrified. And my first thought was, could I possibly leap onto the counter before she could get me? And I thought, no, I don't think so. And then I looked around and I looked for a pot or something I could use as a weapon to fend her off, and there was nothing there. And then I realized I speak English, a fair amount of Spanish, but this dog understands Portuguese. But I did know the dog's name, which helped. And just as she neared even closer, and I could tell she was just about to leap at me, out of nowhere, I just shouted at her, "Solana, siéntate," in Spanish, which means sit. And it was the authority of my voice that the dog heard and felt, and she responded by sitting. At that moment, my Brazilian friend came into the kitchen, surmised what was going on, and was white as a ghost. And he took her by the collar and led her back outside. One of the more frightening stories in my life, but one that I reach back and touch once in a while when I'm trying to find enough courage to do what I think needs to be done. I have a confession to share with you. I didn't go to ministerial school to become a good minister or a better person. I went to get credentialed and to be ordained. I went to craft my own golden calf. While in school, eventually, I came to look at it differently. But it wasn't because I had a change of mind, but rather a change of heart. I just came to realize you can put the title Reverend in front of a name, but it means squat unless there's reverence in your heart. And sometimes that golden calf that I created still calls out to me. But fortunately, and sometimes painfully, Spirit always manages to humble me and brings me new opportunities to learn what it's all about. Real authority cannot be absorbed. It's not applied from the outside like a lotion. It's not something that we could put on like a garment. No outside force, no degree, no credential, no office, no gun, no uniform, no badge, no stole. Not even a really inspirational talk by an ordained minister can bring it home. Unity guru Emily Cady said, "Stop reading books. They only give you someone else's opinion about the truth." I know she said this because I read it in one of her books. The point is, real authority has to be recognized and claimed as a divine birthright. Change doesn't come easy. As was the case with Jesus, if you dare to speak and live from your true authority, you could expect the world and your own ego to push back and to challenge you. I love the story from Exodus where God tells Moses, "Go on over to the Pharaoh and tell him to let my people go." And Moses, quite understandably, says to God, "Excuse me, Lord, but when I do this, I'm pretty sure that the Pharaoh is going to say something like, 'Oh yeah, says who?' And I'm not too sure how to answer him. Can you maybe give me a little help with this?" And be direct. Don't beat around the bush. The Lord's response is great. He doesn't say, "Tell him God says that's who," or "He is that he is has sent me." The Lord tells Moses, "Tell him, I am that I am has sent me." In other words, Moses, connect with your inner being. If you confront the Pharaoh and with the truth of your being, you'll get the message. Every day, we are sent, commissioned by God, to confront the Pharaohs that have authority over us, that hold our spiritual selves in captivity. These are the great Pharaohs of our egoic minds. And I've actually come to name my Pharaoh. I call him King Ego Strut and Step. And I must admit that going to him to make demands for my spiritual freedom can be more than a little intimidating. We've poked some fun today at authority, and I think that's so healthy. But at the same time, we have to sign on to do the work. Understand that those pharaohs within might not go away without a plague or two or nine. we need to muster the courage to let go of false authority and put those golden calves in the rearview mirror. Good news, we don't have to do this overnight. Let it start as a gentle, soft whisper within, and then claim it, own it. Slowly but surely, let it grow until it echoes in the chambers of your very heart. I am that I am has sent me. And now let's take that to prayer and to meditation.